coming up on Golf Today, Rory meets the media in New Orleans. What is the state of his game? And is a return to the PGA Tour boardroom imminent for the four-time major champ? Now, they say the devil is in the details, so what are the nuts and bolts of the new PGA Tour Enterprises equity program, players learning their stake today? Is there a win for the players and the tour as a whole? And speaking of wins, Billy Horschel notched victory number 8 in the Dominican Republic. He joins us from New Orleans with Tyson Alexander, a couple gators down on the bayou. Get your beignets ready for Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Official team event of the PGA Tour's regular season. It's also a good week to eat and listen to some tunes. Zurich Classic of New Orleans begins tomorrow in the Big Easy with two-man tandems competing in foursomes and four-ball play, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. This, of course, is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. Tomorrow, game day. Today, a bunch of players might be checking their emails.
Yeah, today's a day for Palace intrigue, Damon. The equity grants that players are going to be getting from the new for-profit PGA Tour Enterprises. They'll be notified of exactly how much that is worth. And then, of course, there's the ongoing board shenanigans, which may or may not be happening this afternoon.
Fascinating times indeed. Another consequential day in the game, I would say. You might recall that on January 31st, the PGA Tour, in partnership with Strategic Sports Group, announced the launch of PGA Tour Enterprises, a new commercial venture under the PGA Tour's control. And in a first-of-its-kind program, nearly 200 PGA Tour members will have the opportunity to become equity holders in this new company. Now, under the program, players would collectively access over $1.5 billion in equity in PGA Tour Enterprises. Now, these grants, which vest over time, will be based on career accomplishments, recent achievements, future participation in services, and PGA Tour membership status. And grants are only available to qualified PGA Tour players. And today, PGA Tour members will be notified of their current value of awards this program has set aside for them. Rex Hoggart joins us now. Rex, great to see you. What are the broad strokes of this PGA Tour Enterprises equity program?
I think if you look at what the tour is trying to accomplish there, and then one of the buzz phrases going back a couple of months ago is the overall compensation plan. And this goes to 2020 when they started the player impact program. And we all know how that's sort of changed and evolved over the years. And then go back to last year, designated events, what became signature events this year. And those have evolved even in 2 years. Now, this is a big swing for the PGA Tour. I don't think it's going to be the last swing when you look at what they have potentially able to do. You talked about that $1.5 billion investment by SSG. There's another $1.5 billion that they have talked about they could also invest. So you can see either a program like this or this program expanding going forward. But it's an opportunity for the tour to make sure that all of the players, just not the stars, are taken care of.
Rex, there's going to be an inevitable reaction among fans here that, and perhaps an understandable one, that this is money for nothing. And I'm curious, what does the PGA Tour get in return? Are these guys going to commit to playing signature events, which, of course, you remember they did 2 years ago, then decided they didn't actually want to do that after all? Are they going to have more engagement with fans? What are the fans getting out of this? What are the requirements that the players are giving back for the equity?
I think first and foremost, they're looking for loyalty. Well, let's just look at this for what it is. This is a direct response to LIV Golf and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia taking the top stars. And so the tour had to come up with a plan, as I just pointed out, plans to make sure those stars were taken care enough that they would remain loyal to the PGA Tour. And certainly that's the first step. I think the phrase that we heard over and over again following June 6th last year was, how do the players who remain loyal to the PGA Tour get quote unquote made whole again? And this is a big step apart. This is a big part of that. The other half of the equation, and we've heard officials talk about it, Jay Monahan talked about it during the Players' Championship, that if you make the players direct owners of their PGA Tour, in this case PGA Tour Enterprises, they're probably going to be more motivated to do the little things that make the tour better. And I'm not talking about playing good golf here. I'm talking about doing sponsorship engagement seminars, engaging more with fans, being more open to the idea of maybe switching up the product on the golf course, being a little bit more creative. So I think it's an overall idea of trying to get the players on board and understanding what the direction of the PGA Tour is right now.
So it sounds as though fans are actually still going to be waiting for some action from the players in their benefit. One thing seems clear here, Rex, is this isn't a counter offer to Liv, that the tour can't play that money game. They're just simply not equipped. Is this a take it or leave it moment for the players? The tour saying, this is what we are, this is what we're going to be going forward?
Yeah, like I said, it's a big swing, and I think this right now, it's the only swing that the PGA Tour has. And when you start looking at the amount of money that will be handed out in equity shares, and it's also important to point out that this is going to be vested over an eight-year period. So it's not as though players are going to be able to cash in immediately on this money like the players who joined LIV Golf did, but at least they're giving them something moving in that direction, along with the other pieces of the puzzle that I pointed out, to motivate those top players not to be so interested in the other side of the equation on this.
Rex, a number of players from previous generations, I think about Lanny Watkins, who's joined us on this show, Curtis Strange, Hal Sutton, they've expressed some reservations about the direction of the tour, just in terms of the focus on money. In some ways, will that group of players, some World Golf Hall of Famers, be taken care of? Is that important in this new equity program?
I think it is important, but this is group four. I think this is where most of the intrigue lies. When you sort of look at the way the tour has broken down, they're going to hand out these equity grants in four groups. And that final group is what they call, quote unquote, past legends. And I was talking with some PGA Tour Champions players this afternoon, and it's funny, they started the conversation all the same way, that number one on that list, we can all agree, is going to be Jack Nicklaus. But after that, it starts getting a little bit muddy, and it's going to be based on the idea that you're going to get equity grants based on career points. And career points are going to be awarded based on years of membership. That's 15 events at least per year. That's going to be based on the number of times a player has won on the PGA Tour. It's going to be based on the number of times they qualify for Eastlake. They'll get extra points if they win a major championship or the Players. All of these things will factor into it. Where it gets a little muddy is a lot of the players that we're talking about, Jack Nicklaus being the primary example, didn't play during the FedEx Cup era. So it's not an easy apples-to-apples comparison. So I think everyone is waiting for the letters to drop at least this afternoon so we can get an idea of exactly who's going to be in that category. It's going to be 36 players, and there's a lot of intrigue there.
What about the next generation, though, Rex? So much of this is weighted towards past performance, even over the last 5 years with the big-name guys right now. But Ludvig Åberg was in college less than a year ago. He's presumably a huge asset for the PGA Tour going forward. Where does he see the reward in this program?
I think they've carved out something for those players. You talked about Ludvig. I think he's certainly one you to look at. Look at Nick Dunlap. He left college after winning the American Express. Those players need to be taken care of, and that's right in group two. It's been called sort of the up-and-comers group, and it's going to end up being 64 players. They'll split $75 million in this initial equity grant, and I think those are going to be the players you target, the ones that come out immediately on the PGA Tour and make an impact. They did this. You can look at group one. It's going to be 36 players, and that's going to be based on a five-year rolling window. Group two, as I said, is going to be 36 players, but that's based on a three-year window, because what they want to do is recognize those good young players and make sure that they're rewarded and motivated to stay loyal to the PGA Tour as well.
You've got mail, a term taking on great significance on this Wednesday. Great reporting from Rex Hoggard, as always. You know, Eamon, I remember Jay Monahan, the commissioner, during the Players' Championship saying that this equity program makes the interests of the players and the tour more deeply aligned. Is that how you see this day as well?
Probably, yes. It's a question of whether or not, or at what point that also becomes aligned with the fan interest here. We're basically seeing the shift from a member-led tour, which they've always perceived themselves to be, to a member-owned tour. But that's also a difference. Are these guys shareholders or are they owners? And to me, that's a key difference in this, because if they're owners, they're thinking they're making executive decisions for the tour. And the problem is, we've seen over the last few years that players will, naturally enough, make decisions that are fairly selfish in nature based where they are in their career right now. So it's going to be an interesting scenario once this tour starts operating like a business. There's now the private equity component with the strategic sports group. A lot more is going to be demanded of players. And I always point back to Formula One as the prime example. Private equity took over Formula One in 2017. If you look and see what is expected of drivers in terms of fan engagement, marketing, content creation, sponsor interactions, those guys are worked like pack mules before they get behind the wheel of the car. Tour players are accustomed to a world where they think all they have to do to get paid. and see the benefits is play four rounds of golf.
Right.
And I think that era is probably coming to an end. There's going to be a reckoning down the road at some point. This is the breadcrumbs being handed out for these guys. There are a lot of these guys are going to have to prove how they're going to earn the equity and how they're going to grow that equity over time.
How much do you see the breakdown of the groups kind of in a similar way that a lot of players seem to view the new age PGA Tour, with signature events, with the best players having the greatest opportunity to earn the biggest checks, while, you know, the proletariat, as it were, the working class of the PGA Tour membership, as it were, you know, relative to the Tigers and the Rorys, for example, you know, maybe not getting the same level that the highest ranked players are. Is this still going to be a two-tiered tour, as it were, or does this kind of, you know, take care of the concerns, assuage the concerns of player 100 to 125?
I don't think player 100 to 125 have many advocates at a boardroom level in golf anymore. I think you're seeing what has played out over the last few years, the attempt to ring fence the top couple of dozen players who are considered somewhat critical to the tourist business. The actual numbers probably a lot smaller than that, but the guys that they don't want to lose. But you're also seeing the end of this kind of indulgence period now, because it's not a counter offer to live. They're saying this is the business. You are responsible for growing the business. If you want to grow your number, Yasser is not coming riding in here in a private jet to double your number. You're going to have to work for it. And I think this is a take it or leave it moment for the tour. This is what the reality of the business looks like going forward. There's another $100 million a year for the next 5 years that will be paid out on a similar performance basis. Some guys will continue to reap the benefits of that. Some guys today might see as much as they're going to see from this, and it's going to take years to get that money in their pockets.
Gosh, I tell you, at some point, the optics of the discussion of equity and millions of dollars and billions of dollars. And listen, this was a key moment, a turning point for the PGA Tour. This was a disruptive moment. They had to react over the last couple of years. So my goodness, you know, Joe and Jane sitting in Kansas that just want to watch Scottie Scheffler hit irons, I don't think they care about this as much as we talk about this. At some point, it's going to have to be about the history inside the ropes and maintaining that legacy of what Nicklaus and Palmer and Player and Tiger, you know, have done. I'm concerned. Like, this is an important day. Yeah. And maybe those interests between the tour and the players will be more closely aligned. But my goodness, from an optics standpoint, it's got to be about the trophies at some point. It's got to be about stroke average and wins and birdies and bogeys and about the beauty of the game and the tension on a Sunday on a back nine, and not about who's flying what jet to what board meeting.
And it's got to be about the fans at some point as well. If they're tired hearing about money, now they're hearing about equity. Well, Billy Horschel won again on the PGA Tour last weekend, and Billy's headed to a course where he's got a great record, PPC Louisiana. He's been a winner of both individual and team events there. He's about to join us after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. There was an opposite field event last week in the Dominican Republic, the Corrales Punta Cana Championship. Billy Horschel shot a 9-under par 63 in the final round to win by two, pick up his eighth career PGA Tour victory. And with the win on Sunday, he earned entry into the 2024 PGA Championship and the 2025 Players Championship, among other events.
And now Horschel in the field this week at the Zurich Classic in New Orleans, one of his happy places. Knows a thing or two about winning this event. Should we flash back? How about 2013? Do you remember this? I mean, look at the moment, the celebration, double fist bump. Able to get down low, you know, younger man then, you know, bending down to the knees to celebrate. 20 under, one shot better than DA points, his first win on the PGA Tour. Oh, look at that celebration with the fans. They're hugging that trophy. And then he wasn't done. 2018, team with Scott Piercy to win by a shot over Jason Duffner and Pat Perez. 2022 was second with Sam Burns. Also T4 in 2021, T11. In 2023 with Burns. Let's just say a pretty good track record in this event.
And this week, Billy Horschel's teaming up with his fellow Florida Gator. Tyson Alexander is the son of the legendary Florida coach Buddy Alexander. And as Billy said this week, from one swamp to the next, Florida to Louisiana. And Tyson and Billy join us now. Tyson, I want to ask you, you're with a pretty much a thoroughbred pony on this golf course to your left right there. How far do you think you can ride him around the paddock this week?
Well, I hope he's not too tired after last week. But, yeah, he's got a good track record around here, and I'm looking forward to it.
Billy, congratulations on win number 8 on the PGA Tour. You were very honest about the struggles of the past year. Your kids stopped asking you about whether you won or lost. They asked you a different question. What were they asking you over the past several months before you got that win?
Yeah, last year went from dad, you know, are you going to win? Did you win? And it went to dad, are you making a cut? Did you make the cut? So, as I said, it was a cold hard slap in the face. A humble pie, but you know, they still ask me to this day, did I make the cut? But it was nice. Yes, last Sunday they asked if I won or not.
Tyson, where's the relationship start here? How far back do you guys go?
I'm sure it was junior golf, but it really picked up when we got in college together. He was a year older than me, so we were on the team for 3 years, and it just has continued into pro golf.
Has one of you ever had to bail the other one out at any point in this relationship?
There's some stories, yes. We're not going to get into those.
We'll talk about them off camera.
Yeah, off camera. We can't get into those details.
Oh, Darwin, at least give me this. You guys were at UF at one of the great sporting moments, literally in the history of competition. Tim Tebow under center, Buddy the golf coach, just... For those that are considering UF, what's it like to be a student athlete, Billy, on campus at that incredible university in the state of Florida?
It was unbelievable. I mean, as athletes, you know, to see the football team win two, to see the basketball team win two, you had our swim team, you had our track and field team, you had multiple other teams winning championships when we were there. It sort of just gave us more motivation to be part of that, to add to those championships. And then for the student aspect of it, it was pretty fun to celebrate those victories, let's just say that.
Billy, details are being released to the players today of the tour's equity plan, which I assume you're going to be part of. And obviously these aren't offers that are designed to counter live. There's no point playing that money game. Do you feel as though the tour has reached a point of take it or leave it for the players, that this is what the business needs to be going forward? This is the road we're on, and we hope you're with us, and if you're not, so be it.
I would say, yeah. I think, listen, I'm not going to say there's not going to be PGA Tour players that leave if a deal doesn't get done with PIF and Liv is still around. You know, money talks, and we've seen that. But I think this is a way for the players to feel more part of the PGA Tour, to have a say and to add to the growth of the PGA Tour, and then see the benefits of their hard work and growing the PGA Tour. So I think hopefully going forward with this equity program, with what we're putting together and putting forward to the players, I think hopefully guys will understand that the tour is behind them. They want us to be part of the PGA Tour, not just maybe sort of the way it's been the last, you know, several decades, but truly be a part of the growth of the PGA Tour.
Tyson, what's it been like for you to see what's been going on behind the scenes? You joined the PGA Tour in 2023. You've grown up in this game, your father, your grandfather. What's it been like? Do you pay attention to what's going on outside the ropes?
Yeah, I've obviously grown up in the game of golf, and I feel like I've had a good grasp on it. Obviously, we've had a lot of outside factors, I would say, over the last year or two that have been interesting. But yeah, it's all a learning process. Learning inside the ropes and outside has been a bit of a learning curve, but I think I'm getting the hang of it. He helps me out some with that. So it's nice to have someone that I can pick his brain and help me through things.
Well, hopefully he helps you out some this week as well, Tyson. You've been close on the PGA
me,
Tour.
Me too.
You've been close, Tyson, on the PGA Tour in your short career. Does it matter to you if the win comes individually or in a team event with Billy?
Obviously, I'll take any win I can get right now. He's proven that he's won in bunches, too. He's won back-to-back weeks before. So, like I said, I hope he's not tired after last week. And I'll take any win I can get.
Billy's still strong, still height of his power. Billy, I want to ask you about your relationship with TPC Louisiana in particular. You've won as an individual. You've won as a teammate. Why is this part of the world, this golf course in particular, such a good fit for you and your skill set?
I think it requires, really good iron play. You've got to, the Bermuda greens play a massive part. Growing up on Bermuda grass my entire life, I feel comfortable on the greens and around the greens. I think just the feeling that I get when I come here, it feels like a second home. A lot of the friends that I've met over the years are like family now. I talk to them on a regular basis. And then I've been part of the Zurich family since 2013. And they're family too. I mean, I see a lot of the same customers and clients over the last 10, 11 years coming to this event. So there's a lot of factors that make it a great place for me. And in the sense of it's a second home and I feel like I'm coming home, that makes a big difference.
The real currency on the PGA Tour these days, Billy, is FedEx Cup points. The winners this week each receive 400 FedEx Cup points, which is more than you received for your win last week. Does that sit okay with you, or does it make sense in terms of the different events and the cadence of the season from week to week?
The points, we can always discuss about the points, and everybody has an opinion on points in certain events and whether signature events right now get too many, or do the opposite field events get enough, or the event like this where I think the winner should get 500. It's been 400 since a team event got put in place. I do believe the winner should get 500 points. The team winner should each get 500 points. I know there was a brief discussion with that amongst the pack, I think, in the last year or two. I would say it got shot down. It didn't really go anywhere. But listen, the points are the points. At the end of the day, if you play well and you do the right things, everything else will sort of fall into place. So I leave the whole point structure and everything else to people that are a lot more smarter in that department.
Tyson, it was 10 years ago where Billy Horschel unveiled a gator chop in Atlanta, Georgia, on the way to winning the FedEx Cup. Should your first PGA Tour victory come this Sunday down on the bayou, LSU country, would you still unveil a gator chop for victory number one aside your good buddy?
I don't have any pants like he wore that day, but I'll still throw a gator chomp. I'll still throw a gator chomp out there for you.
Oh, love it. Can't wait till Sunday, guys. Have a great week. You're going to pair together like peanut butter and jelly. Thanks for the time, and enjoy it.
Thanks, Damon.
Thanks, guys.
Damon. All right, and you can watch. Maybe I should have said more like gumbo and jambalaya or some beignets. Such a good food town. You can catch the action from TPC Louisiana Thursday and Friday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Saturday, Sunday on Golf Channel before switching over to CBS.
When Rory McIlroy is front and center again this week, inside the ropes and outside. The world number two is playing with Shane Lowry, the Zurich Classic, and he's making a push to rejoin the board of the PGA Tour that he left just 6 months ago. We're going to hear from him coming up right after the break.
Back on Golf Today, how about these two youngsters? Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, back in the day, great friends through the years, going all the way back to 2007, European Amateur Team Championships, a couple of major champs themselves. Families are close, they practice together, hang out, live near one another in South Florida. Yeah, remember that a year ago, Ryder Cup teammates in Rome, you name it, they've done a lot together in this game. And for the first time, partners. World number two Rory making his tournament debut alongside Lowry, who will make his fifth start at the Zurich Classic. First round started tomorrow, 1:44 p.m. Eastern time, alongside Colin Morikawa and partner Kurt Kitayama.
McIlroy spent his fourth consecutive week on the PGA Tour. There have been flashes of brilliance, but a lot of golf that even he would describe as just kind of okay. His best finish, a third at the Valero Texas Open, and a tie for 19th at the Players. Team Lowry McIlroy is with the media.
Rory, are you able to confirm whether or not you a potential return to the policy board?
Not as of yet, no.
Are we able to speak in hypotheticals?
Maybe.
I guess when you go back to a year ago or 8 months ago when you decided to step away, you talked about wanting to focus more on inside the ropes and things like that. I guess what has changed in the last 8 months, and kind of how do you look back now on that decision to walk away, and why, you know, it might be interesting now?
I think I can be helpful. I don't think there's been much progress made in the last 8 months, and I was hopeful that there would be. And you know, I think I could be helpful to the process, but only if people want me involved, I guess. So you know, when Webb, you know, and I talked, and he talked about potentially, you know, coming off the board. I said, look, if it was something that other people wanted, I would gladly take that seat. And that was the conversation that we had. But yeah, I think that's the whole reason. I feel like I can be helpful. I feel like I care a lot, and I have some pretty good experience and good connections within the game and sort of around the wider sort of ecosystem and everything that's going on. So, you know, but at the end of the day, it's not quite up to me to just come back on the board. There's a process that has to be followed, and but I'm willing to do it if that's what people want, I guess.
And unification has been your big thing the last few months. If hypothetically you were back, is that something you would then even have a stronger stance on the board?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think it's the only way forward for the game of golf.
I mean, you've you know, said before, I think, that maybe you didn't always see eye to eye with some people before on matters. How do you manage that, I guess, if you're back, in terms of trying to kind of steer things a certain way?
Compromise, but also, you know, try to articulate your points as well as you can, and try to, you know, help people see the benefits of what unification could do for the game and what it could do for this tour in particular. And we obviously realize the game is not unified right now for a reason, and you know, there's still, you know, some hard feelings and things that need to be addressed. But I think at this point, you know, for the good of the game, we all need to put those feelings aside and all move forward together. I would say that I've played some of my best golf while being a PGA Tour board member, so I don't think it really hindered me, but it was maybe just taking away some time from me pursuing things or spending time doing things that I wanted to do at home, and you know, having to hop on calls, you know, 2-3 times a week, and just the whole, you know, the whole thing started to take a toll, as it has on a lot of the players, right? Like, we're golfers at the end of the day. We don't need to be trying to run a $15 billion business. We need to go out there and play golf and let the business people do the business things.
You know, a report came out today that the equity numbers might be released to you guys today. I guess the question is, what's enough? You know, what's a number that will make you guys feel validated for staying, you know, considering the live payouts?
I think the one thing we've learned in golf over the last 2 years is there's never enough.
We're already talking equity and as well as the future of the PGA Tour. And he may be right about that last question about, you know, whether enough is enough. Is he enough? Coming back, this former PGA Tour staunch defender who walked away about 5 months ago wanting to focus on his game, will he be welcomed back, this player with the worldview and talking unification?
I suppose it depends who you ask. You'd think that since he is the biggest needle mover who's actually playing the tour these days, since Tiger really isn't, that there would be a lot of stakeholders who would want to see him back there, fans, sponsors, certainly other people within the broader ecosystem of golf. But Rory McIlroy has also been urging a solution or a settlement of this civil war in golf that isn't necessarily a universally held opinion out there. And you can very clearly see that Rory's on a collision course potentially with other potential members of the board, other player directors. There's at least one player director has tried to delay any vote to put Rory McIlroy back on the board, based on the sources I've talked to today, that they kind of want to slow play this and follow a process. Well, there was no process applied when Tiger Woods was added to the board overnight. Tiger's literally the only person on the board who does not have a term limit on the board. He's essentially on the board for life unless it's dictated otherwise, because there's never actually been a term set for Tiger. So process is a useful weapon to apply at certain times whenever you want to use delay tactics at a board level, but it's not necessarily universally applied to all. And I think there's definitely a faction of player directors on the board who are not necessarily all that incentivized or enthused to move in the direction that Rory McIlroy is suggesting they move in. And there's a lot of issues behind that, and not the least of which is the idea of LIV players coming back, how they would move back into any kind of ecosystem. There are players who just simply want some kind of sanction applied to those guys, and there are other players who think that's just nonsensical and that the game has to move on from it. And those are two pretty powerful, distinct factions. Rory McIlroy is leading one of them, but that's not universally held among the other board members.
What about for Jay Monahan? I mean, at one time, Rory McIlroy was Jay Monahan's most powerful player lieutenant. You can make that argument. Does his worldview in talking unification jibe with the way Jay Monahan was talking, for example, at the Players' Championship about this transformational time in our game and the importance of unification?
My sense is that the McIlroy view and the Monahan view are very much aligned, and there are others on the board who share a similar view. The question is whether or not Rory McIlroy coming back on the board can actually be effective. He did say he wants to be helpful, which is fine, but you can't presume that the reason there hasn't been progress is purely because of the PGA Tour. That the idea of getting some kind of claim on the time and attention of Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who serves on over 100 boards, is a recurring issue. Having decisions made by the PIF side in the negotiating room, I've also been told, is an issue. Who's authorized to make decisions on thorny issues? That's part of the reason why this process is dragging on as long as it is. So putting Rory McIlroy in the room, no matter how well thought of he is by anybody else in that negotiating room, it doesn't necessarily hasten a deal. I don't think it hurts, but it certainly doesn't hasten a deal, because it's not as though the PGA Tour boardroom is the sole reason why progress has lagged as long as it has.
There are many processes that are dragging on in the boardroom and in negotiations. Any part of you surprised that he would even consider going back on the board? Listen, when he left, he looked exhausted. I'll never forget an interview he did with Todd Lewis in Charlotte. Just everything just seemed like it was just too much. He had been such a staunch defender, surprised that June 6th stepped away, motivated briefly for a time, played great in Canada, and, you know, had poked a little fun at Greg Norman when he, you know, matched his number in PGA Tour wins, later surpassed him. But are you surprised, or does his worldview, curiosity, Renaissance man, you know, having lived in the Middle East for 4 years, you know, he wants to be in the room where it happens. Is that kind of almost part of his personality as well, the curious mind, the thoughtful Rory McIlroy?
To an extent. I also think there's an uncommon altruism there, this idea of what is actually good for the game. Because ultimately, whatever money is handed out in equity grants or anything else, it's always going to be a tiny slice of the net worth of Rory McIlroy. Mm. That's not necessarily true of other players. So I think he's potentially less hostage to the idea of some kind of sanction or some kind of benefit for him and sanction of his opponents over the last few years. So he probably has a cleaner worldview of where things should go, but it's not necessarily fully supported in the locker room. There's a lot of players who are disincentivized to see some kind of reunification, because these are guys who no longer have to beat John Rahm to win a golf tournament. A bonus that is coming to them that might otherwise have been going to a Brooks Koepka.
Right.
Or if you're in an opposite field event, you're not necessarily losing spots to guys coming back. There are a lot of undercurrents as to why players on the PGA Tour side, including at a board level, might not necessarily be incentivized to see some kind of unification. Mm. But ultimately, what we're devolving into here, and this board issue is dangerously close to devolving into a schoolboy squabble right now. Nice work, boys, because fans are drifting away, sponsors are drifting away. This game is dangerously close to being broken, and they're going to start squabbling over a seat on the board. It's really not a good sign for anyone who thinks that it's about time this game move forward.
So many differences of opinion, so many moving parts. We'll see if Rory has the vote, should it come to pass, and he find himself back on the board on the PGA Tour. Before we go to break, let's take a check of the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. You know it, we watch it really throughout the year. You know, the 10 top players every year make it all the way to the Tour Championship in Atlanta. You see Scottie Scheffler. I mean, can anybody catch him in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10? Wyndham Clark has been a runner-up a couple of times to Scottie Scheffler. this year. We'll watch this list very, very closely throughout the season. And folks, it's a family affair in the Big Easy this week. Three sets of brothers get set to tee it up in the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. We'll hear from the guys coming up next. That looks like Matt Alex, doesn't it? And how about the Cooties? UT in the house. We got Kevin Mitchell. We got Joel Damon. Look at that, Kazmir Keith wearing shorts. Gets a little moist, gets a little warm down in the bayou.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
It's the 75th Zurich Classic of New Orleans, seventh time as a team competition. The event will feature 82-man teams, first and third rounds, four-ball format, second and final rounds, foursomes or alternate shot. No apologies to your teammate, positive attitude, all important this week. I'd be tough, though, when you're playing with your brother. There are three sets of brothers competing this year, including Matt and Alex. Oh, what fun they've had at TCC, the Country Club, Brookline. They finished T19 in their tournament debut back in 2023.
And a couple of Danish identical twins, Nikolaj and Rasmus Højgaard, will team up for the first time. Nikolaj, who briefly led the Masters a couple of weeks ago, he played back in 2023 here, while Rasmus competed in 2021. And another set of twins and PGA Tour rookies, Parker and Pearson Coody, are here too. They earned their tour cards via the 2023 Korn Ferry Tour and are making their debut at the Zurich Classic. Parker had his first career top 10 on tour at last week's Corrales Punta Cana Championship. Tied sixth there. Their grandfather, Charlie Coody, made 22 starts in the Zurich Classic. His best was a fifth place finish back in 1971, just 2 weeks after he won the Masters. And we're joined now by Steve Burkowski from TPC Louisiana. Steve, have you figured out how to tell the difference between Nikolaj and Rasmus yet?
Eamon, I haven't. I'm going to come clean. I've gotten to know Nikolaj over the course of this year on the PGA Tour. And when Rasmus ended up walking to the interview area first, I said, Nikolaj, good to see you. He said, Steve, good to see you. But I'm Rasmus. I'm not my brother Nikolaj. So that happens quite a bit, as you might expect. But I was able to catch up with all three sets of brothers heading into Thursday's opening round, and they talked about their game plan for the upcoming week, as well as describing one another.
I mean, I think we just know each other's games really well. I mean, we've played countless practice rounds together, let alone tournaments. And I mean, we almost talked through all our tournaments together too, about what happened on a certain hole. And I just think we know each other's game really well. And I mean, hopefully that plays to our advantage this week.
Pearson, that said, what type of game plan do you guys try to create with this format?
Yeah, our caddies have been around this place a few times with some different teams and everything, and so we're kind of leaning on them coming in this week. You know, Parker's kind of had some better ball striking stats, and they said he should take the odds, and I'll take the evens. So we're just really kind of relying on them this week to kind of make some of the team decisions. Even though we know each other really well, we're trying to kind of mesh it all together.
That said, what does it mean as brothers to play in a PGA Tour event as teammates in your rookie campaign?
I think it'll be really fun. I mean, we were fortunate to play together in Houston, and that was a ton of fun. I think it was a lot of fun for our friends and family. But I think this week to really be, I mean, rooting for each other on every single shot will be a lot of fun. And again, hopefully it's a ton of fun for us and our friends and family that come out.
I think just keep letting him read my putts. It seems to work last year, and we gave it a go today, and it kept working. So I think we'll stick with that plan of just letting him line him up and me hitting him.
Matt, what's it like playing alongside your brother in a PGA Tour event?
Yeah, it's great fun. It really is. I think that's the best word to describe it. It's just a lot of fun. You know, the four ball aspect of it is so nice because, you know, you can sort of help each other out and you don't feel under as much pressure. Obviously, foursomes changes that, but again, you know, you're playing as a team, so it's important to sort of stay positive. So I think playing together is what makes it so exciting.
You two guys are very different, as I've got to know you for the better part of 11 years. Alex, how would you describe Matt as a brother and a golfer?
I think he's pretty good at both, to give him credit. You know, obviously as a golfer, he's as good as it gets, in my opinion. You know, always looking to get better, works incredibly hard, someone who, you know, I look up to a lot and try and take as much as his game I can and put it into mine. So, and, you know, as a brother, he's a great brother. I can't, there's nothing I can fault. Sometimes he's a little hard on me. Sure, he won't admit that. But, no, he's great. It's nice to have, you know, not many people are lucky enough to have both. Someone I can reach out to with my golf game and in just as a brother. So, yeah, incredibly fortunate to have that.
We've been talking about it for a couple of years, and this year it finally came together, schedule-wise. And, yeah, it's good to have Raz by my side this week, and hopefully he feels the same, I don't know. But, yeah, we're excited for this week.
Rasmus, what about this opportunity to play on the PGA Tour alongside your older brother by a whopping 2 minutes?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. As Nikolai said, it's an event we wanted to play together, and finally we can do it now. So I'm very excited to be here and you know, try and go out and compete well the next couple of days.
All three teams of brothers excited for the opportunity ahead here at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And the Cooties told me their scripting Thursday through Sunday is going to be the exact same thing. So good luck to the scoring and spotting man on the broadcast this week. The Højgaards still to be determined. And while we have two sets of twins, all six excited about the prospects here starting on Thursday.
Thanks, Steve. I guess we're going to find out this week if the concept of brotherly love can survive 72 holes, TPC Louisiana. Well, let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Ranking, the program that awards professional status to top graduating college golfers. No switch up at the top here, though. Stanford's Michael Thorbjørnsen, still number one. And while right behind him is the actual number one in the World Amateur Golf Rankings, Christo Lamprecht from Georgia Tech. We'll be right back.
Back on Golf Today, time now for the 19th hole. How about 15-year-old Miles Russell put on an absolute display on the Korn Ferry Tour over the weekend, becoming the youngest player to top 25 in a Korn Ferry Tour or PGA Tour event. T20 finished the Lecom Suncoast Classic. 15-year-old Miles earns himself a spot in this week's Veritex Bank Championship. Young Miles on his journey so far.
How cool was that experience?
Yeah, I had a blast. I mean, it was so fun playing in front of that many people too. Like, you don't get that often, so it definitely gets the adrenaline going too, just a little bit. You just have to take advantage of those opportunities when you get them, because you certainly don't get many. And so when you do get some, you definitely have to capitalize. Just being out there playing with guys like this, just kind of veterans, and seeing the way they go about things is pretty cool.
How are the guys treating you out here?
Oh, they've been great. I mean, I feel like almost everybody I walk by gives me a pound and said good week last week. And I mean, everybody's just so friendly and helpful. It's just been kind of almost like you feel like you've been out here for more than a week. It's been cool. I mean, they've been helpful. They've definitely, I mean, Sam played well here last year, so he's given a few secrets. But no, they've been great, fun to play with, and nice guys.
Miles, deep voice, it hits the ball to the moon. Look at these stock yardages from the gap wedge. You got all the way up to the driver, 280. Am I seeing that correctly for a 15-year-old?
I'm pretty sure I've got head covers in my bag that are older than Russell, but not a club in the bag goes anywhere close to his stock yardages.
I thought those were your stock yardages.
Such an impressive kid.
For a moment. Maybe one day he gets to play in a team event like the Zurich Classic of New Orleans.
Yeah, it is the only team event on the schedule right now, but that might not be the case over time, because if there is going to be some kind of deal cooked up between the PIF and the PGA Tour over the course of the next year or two, then it's likely that there will be a team golf component, and the question will be whether or not fans are that engaged or interested in team golf outside of the existing events, and can they be persuaded to care about team golf in terms of a season-long standings rather than a one-off week like we have today.
The fans want to see great golf. That much I know. Great golf coming your way, LA, New Orleans, and beyond.